I mix what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like. All right, what's up, world? Welcome to another edition of I Mix What I Like, imixwhatilike.org, at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. Again, I'm Jared Ball, and we are quickly reaching out on the bat phone, pun intended, on a number of different levels, to our I Mix What I Like comrade, colleague, the great Dr. Todd Stephen Burrows, whose work can not only be found, of course, at imixwhatilike.org, but also at drumsatthe globalvillage.com. Dr. Burrows, welcome back.
I am Alvin Jones, the unseen DJ on BET once again.
That's it. Well, we're both unseen today. We're doing a strict, quick audio podcast, whatever, for this review you did. Because, of course, Ta-Nehisi Coates, very popular writer, very talented writer, is once again the buzz with his latest book, We Were 8 Years in Power, An American Tragedy. You've just published a review, both at your website, and of course, again, we do have that, and we'll post it with this discussion at imixwhatilike.org. But let's start with your quick overarching summary of what you found to be the case with this book. Yeah, and what is he saying? What's happening here?
Well, Ta-Nehisi Coates has decided, interestingly enough, and I think with some merit, to talk about his thought processes over the last 8 years. And so he selected articles about the Obama era, and he has these, you know, quite astonishing opening essays in which he explains his thought processes at the time. So you get a chronology of his Obama pieces, but you also get his commentary and really his borderline media criticism of his own work. And all of these essays were previously published in The Atlantic. Now, there is an epilogue that was recently published in The Atlantic about Donald Trump called The First White President. So that is the epilogue of the book. But his articles on reparations, his articles on Bill Cosby, his articles on Malcolm X, and his profile of Michelle Obama. This is the book contains those articles.
So your review, your more or less, I mean, it's a short commentary review of his book, is titled Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Obama Embedded Journalist Wokes, or How Trump's Big White Lifesaver Pulled Him Out from Drowning in Kool-Aid. What does all that mean? What do you mean when you first say that he was an embedded journalist, an Obama embedded journalist? And then what is meant by this white lifesaver, Trump's big white lifesaver, pulled him from drowning in Kool-Aid? What do you mean by all that?
Well, let me start with my own personal statements on this. I mean, I voted for Barack Obama twice because I wanted the black leadership to press him to do things that we all would want. None of that happened. So I understand what it's like to be swept away by the president. But Ta-Nehisi Coates talks about, you know, I was unemployed and all of a sudden I had this opportunity to go cover this first black man really taking a serious run for presidency, and then he became president. And Ta-Nehisi Coates talked about how I was swept away by this. And he argues with himself about how he views Obama, particularly in the piece My President Was Black. So, you know, he admits that he was swept away by the Obamas. He was drawn into their orbit, into the orbit of going, as he says, from the unemployment office to the Oval Office. And then you see with My President Was Black and The First White President, these last two essays, you see kind of like the denouement, right? If you see the rise, then you see the denouement. And so then he starts to become more critical of American society and interestingly enough, comes to some conclusions that for many of us, you know, would be presuppositions, right? So Coates has done an interesting job. I mean, I don't want to attach sinister motives to him, but let me just say that I think in terms of strategy, he found a white audience, and his white audience has grown with him, and now he's leading his white audience to some conclusions that I think many of us already know, that America is a permanently racist state, that racism is a psychological evil that is implemented, and even though you may have friends, you may have white friends, white liberals, they are still implicated. So, you know, he comes to some conclusions that for many of us, you know, we're like, really? I mean, we knew this. But he did so, you know, with an elite white audience and elite white freshman. And that's what I was trying to say in the review.
You actually start your review by saying, why waste time knocking another writer's immensely successful hustle when the target publicly decides to do it somewhat himself? If you were to take some time to waste knocking that hustle, how would you at least describe the hustle? What do you mean by that hustle? And then I would want you to say another word or two about, well, I mean, you sort of already have, but I kind of would want you to say even more about this sort of posthumous in terms of Obama's 8 years in office, self-critique, this semi 180 that Coates does.
Well, I mean, I'll answer that question, sir, by going into history. John Henry Clark wrote in Harlem USR an article called The Alienation of James Baldwin, where he talks about how James Baldwin has found this elite white audience, and they seem to, in kind of S&M fashion, enjoy Baldwin's whipping of them. I don't know if you remember this essay. It was published in 1965. So he wasn't the same as James Baldwin that later on said that the United States is somewhere between the Statue of Liberty and a Pillar of Salt, right? There was some growth in between that Clark essay and what Baldwin did in his final, you know, essay work, The Evidence of Not Evidence of Things Not Seen. What we see with Ta-Nehisi Coates is that I think we see somebody who had an opportunity to cover a black president who was chosen the way many of us are chosen to go to grad school and other places, and I include myself in that. He was chosen to cover Obama, and he decides to identify with Obama. He definitely identifies with being a member of the black elite. I mean, he literally ends one article, as I say in the review, he literally ends one article with him moving on up to a greater part in New York City where I started humming the Jefferson's name, right? So he had an opportunity to actually take a white audience through an analysis of white racism and white supremacy. And I think this book represents his attempts to do that. What was the other question that you had?
Well, I was just asking about this 180 that he seemed to do. You said, you know, like a lot of us already understood, and I think some of this is wrapped up, in, as I at least understood it, in your point about who his audience actually is, that being an affluent, white, middle-class, liberal audience that is happy to hear something about white supremacy, while, as others have pointed out, hearing very little about class, for instance, is just one point. But the seeming 180 that Coates does from this, you know, full-on embedded position supporting Obama to a more self-critical look at how he got caught up in the propaganda, and we didn't really see what he had hoped or what many expected we would see after 8 years, which of course leads me to my final question, and I'll segue there now, which was going to be, if you want to get to it now or not, what does he mean by this, we were in 8 years in power?
Right. That phrase is from Out of Reconstruction, where he talks about how in Reconstruction, black people got the vote and got into political office and had more power in an 8-year period than they had had in their entire history of the country.
So we're not meant to hear that that's what he's saying about the 8 years of Obama's presidency?
He's making a play. He's making a word play, but he's quoting this period of Reconstruction, and he's doing that because he needs to get his white audience all the way through the history of America so they can understand what he's saying with the first white president. Now to go back to Obama for a second, I mean, he makes a critique of Obama that I really enjoy, and it may not be a critique as much as it's an observation. And my president was black, he says basically three things about Obama. He says, one, Obama was loved by white people and trusted by white people, so he loves and trusts white people. The second thing he says is that, the second thing he said was that Obama was an activist, not a protester. And the third thing he says about Obama is that Obama, as president, does not see anything outside of consensus. So he basically admits that, you know, Obama is a person who works within hegemony and who is not an angry black man and who's not going to lead us to the promised land. Like, he admits that. Now, he says, in terms of himself, he talks about how, you know, there were times when he went to the Oval Office and he thought he wasn't strong enough attacking the president, and he felt guilty, and then he would come back, you know, the second time and come at him real hard. I don't want to psychoanalyze him because I'm not a psychologist, but there does seem to be a little bit of element of kind of like, okay, maybe I was wrong. I feel kind of guilty now about these things I've said. I mean, you know, there's one essay where he says we're in Malcolm X's America because of Barack Obama. And he says that, you know, in that introductory essay about that period, he says, you know, I now admit that analogy was strained, you know.
Strained, to say the least. So then, very quickly, what does he mean that Trump is the first white president?
He means that Trump is the first president to be elected after an African American president, and he's elected only because he is white and will restore white supremacy and white hegemony, both directly and indirectly. So he makes the argument, talking about whiteness. I think the first white president is a brilliant essay because he talks in depth about whiteness, and he talks about how, you know, there's this kind of liberal canard that, you know, white people vote against their own interests, right? You know, with what's the problem with Kansas and all this other kind of political science literature that supposedly shows that white people vote against their own political and economic interests. What Coates argues that no, white people always vote for their own interests as white people. And this is an analysis that, you know, those of us who study black nationalism, pan-Africanism, you know, something that we're, you know, not unfamiliar with. But Coates has become rich and famous for articulating this and getting to that point. So you see in these final two essays, he gets to that point and he brings his white audience with him. And, you know, as a strategy for playing a white journalism game, I mean, he's quite successful with it. But the question now becomes, what will he do next?
But you say that that chapter is brilliant, but two things immediately pop up to my mind here. One,
sure,
every white president before and after Barack Obama was elected to support and buttress white supremacy, and specifically the white supremacy of a ruling elite. So I don't know how that, and to suppress potentially revolutionary efforts within the country. So that I don't know what.
And there's a huge body of literature, as we know. There's a huge body of literature on that.
So I don't know I don't know what makes Trump new to that. But then the other thing is, just quickly, the other point would be,
sure,
that comes to my mind very quickly, is that this is what makes, this is why I suspect Coates still remains so welcomed by an affluent white liberal audience, because to the extent that I understand the point you're making about his point, it is wrong, sure, to suggest that white people always vote their interests as white people and don't vote against their own class or economic interests. I think that is an unnuanced look at how white supremacy works. As we see right now, so many poor whites that voted their white interest with Trump voted against their class and economic interest in the same process.
Well, he's saying that race is an overriding interest. He's saying that white supremacy and whiteness is an overriding interest.
Right, but doesn't that make the point that those who make the class argument often make, that race is often used as a canard or a false flag in hiding the economic or class interests of those involved? I mean, that would be the point, that if they're voting their supposed white interests, and that is what they're satisfying, even as they elect someone who is making every material choice that goes against them, that is the point. Like, they're not getting jobs, they're not getting education, they're not getting income, you know, tax breaks, they're not getting anything that's benefiting poor and working class white folks, other than that base white interest of having a white supremacist president. But materially,
and what Coates argues, right, and what Coates argues is that it's a symbolism of Trump doing exactly that. Mm-hmm. It's a symbolism of Trump saying, I want you, because I have no other qualifications for president, because that's what he argues. He argues that Trump has no other qualifications for president other than being white and representing white interests directly.
But again, that, that wouldn't be a first either. Yeah. That's not a first.
Well, I mean, this is why I think we need more people writing more articles that have a historical background. And although I like what Coach does a lot, I mean, particularly, like I said, as he's grown older and as he, frankly, has become more comfortable, pun intended, he's actually engaging in the type of history that we need to constantly be analyzed. But I also think we need to have in-depth, long-form articles that explain this from other points of view. He keeps claiming he's not a black nationalist, although, you know, you see the through line of his work and you know what it is, right? You can recognize it, right? But we need more long-form analysis of America from a social historical base that people will actually listen to and read. You know, it's always good to have these folks, but, you know, there was James Baldwin, but there was also an entire cadre of people who wrote for a magazine called Freedom Waves, right? Which Baldwin actually joined up at some point. So, I mean, you know, we need an entire community of people to do this real analysis and to have these arguments.
All right. Well, Dr. Burroughs, we will not only link this with your review of Coates' work, but we'll also put up the link so that people can check out your previous work on Freedom Waves and get caught up with some of that history as well. Thanks again for joining us at I Mix What I Like, Dr. Todd Stephen Burroughs.
Thank you for being my publisher and the publisher of other writers as well, Jared. We need what you do.
I Mix What I Like. What I Like.